Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello. So on the week lit up by cheap defenders, sometimes off the bench for many, and while the Leicester juggernaut trundles on, we're back to reflect on the games just gone and ask some key questions ahead of the final matchup in this block before the international break again ensues. And for once, I had a good week, so I'm well up for it this time. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm joined today not just by Nick, but also by Luke Jurdy, at Luke Jurdy on Twitter. His podcast is Triple Captains, at Triple Captain 3, and he's better known to my other half as Jesse Donovan from Hollyoaks. Welcome, mate. It's great to have you on. And for those of you who haven't seen the travails between Darcy, Goldie, and finally now your coming wedding to a Courtney, please introduce yourself to the good people, maybe more from the FPL angle, because I think the Venn diagram of FPL managers and Hollyoaks viewers probably includes me and a few others. I just want to say my other half loves it. We've got one TV, three rooms, so I'm compelled to watch it, and of course equally love it. But yeah, anyway, great to have you on, Luke. Just introduce yourself to the good people.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it, and a lovely introduction. I think you and Bully's wife from FPL Surgery are, so you and Bully are about the only FPL Hollyoaks fans crossover. But it's a great group to be a part of. I'm an actor with kind of unhealthy obsession with FPL, like the rest of us, and started to really take it seriously last season, managed to finish in the top 10K, and then a friend of mine came to me in pre-season and said, do you want to do a podcast? So I said, yeah, why not? We'll join the community, and there's so many good pods out there already. So really enjoying speaking about FPL every week and watching Match of the Day and much football as possible. Really enjoyable, considering I'm a United fan, so that's not so enjoyable this season. So it's nice to have FPL to support kind of other players as well. Started Triple Captain this year. Just trying to build listeners and enjoying the process.
Yeah, welcome again, Luke. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the pod today to discuss FPL. So yeah, just to say who we are Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL or WGTA_Nick, and you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you'd like to get the podcast, and give us a review if you've got time as well, because we want to get rid of those rubbish reviews that people have given us. So what are we talking about today?
Well, following on from I think last week's chat about the season-long men, this weekend's events have really worked well in terms of highlighting how the men around the peripheries, you know, the killer to the filler, the filler to the killer, I suppose I should say, are the boys who at the moment are the ones we should be looking at, because at the end of the day, it seems like there's loads of guys, although, you know, Sterling maybe is in the in flux at the moment as being a season keeper, who we're going to be relying on going forward. So I think it's definitely worth turning the spotlight on them and kind of the impact they're having on things like, you know, formations and how we're setting up our teams. Also, of course, we've got the features and many, many questions from the community. So thanks, as always, for those.
Yeah, sounds good, Tom. So shall we start then with the game week reviews? And Tom, do you want to start for a change? Because you actually had a pretty damn decent game week and a little bit of luck, if I dare say, as well, in the Leicester game.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the fact that you said that you actually had a good game week says it all. You used the word actually there. I did do well, actually. I have to say that myself. 84 points, -4. And I got Soyuncu off the bench because Mendy got pepped. But yeah, I mean, overall, I was pretty pleased. I mean, the captain, my captain Sterling, got me 2 points. And it's very unusual to get 80 plus when your captain does nothing, right? And I said to FPL Dave on a stream last week that my formation is basically a 0-7-3 because Mendy and TAA are basically, you know, wide midfielders. Lindstrom is not a defender. He's so not a defender. In fact, it's embarrassing. So, you know, 84 points from a team of, you know, seven midfielders and three strikers. I'll take it. Tuchman's four, Mopay and Mane came in for Wilson and Son. It was a successful one, actually. I got 14 points and Son, unfortunately, got sent off and Wilson got yellow card. So that was 11 points. Take the four away. It's still seven profits. So, hooray, go me. Wish Gomez the very best, of course, with that Son red card. Mane, Liverpool's clutch player, came in. I sung his praise on last week's pod and I just had to bring him in. And Mo Page looks to have been unlucky. And his XG was 1.06 this week. So he was the big underperformer, no goal. And he could easily be gone, actually, despite the easy game this weekend against United, Luke. I guess this week it all relied on Jimmy beating out Vardy, which he did. But being without Vardy and Leicester was frightening. And I'm trying to think about how I get in Vardy this week. What about you, Luke, then? How did you get on?
I did all right as well, actually. It's nice to get a green arrow after a couple of reds. So I got 72 with captain fail Sterling as well. So I was like you, kind of very surprised that with a captain fail to get that many points. And I think if a lot of us actually get our captain choice right, we could be dangerous. I think each week when I've been getting it wrong, I've still been doing okay and kind of hitting the average and that. So I was getting it right every week. So it's a bit disappointing now. I mean, all of my midfield got two. De Bruyne, Sterling, Son and Martial. I brought in Martial and Vardy for Aguero and Cantwell. So I think still managed to get, I mean, did Cantwell play?
I think he got 1 point.
He got 1 point. So I think I've made a point on that, on those moves. I had two frees. I just badly wanted to get rid of Aguero. I didn't care if he scored five against Southampton. It's just really, really annoyingly benched like three of the last four games. I just can't be doing with that anymore. I've got Vardy in. He's nailed on. He's player of the season so far. So I'm happy with him. I had Soyuncu and Lundstrom in my team. So that was great. TAA got 7, Abraham 12, Vardy 6, and 15 Pope, 2 each. So yeah, I'm up to kind of, I think, about 350k overall, which I'd have probably taken at the start of the season if someone offered me that by game week 11. So I'm pleased. It's nice to get a green arrow.
Yeah, I got the same score as you, actually, Luke, there. I got 72 points as well, which I'm pretty pleased with. You know, the main men, sort of John Lundstrom getting the points, 21 points, just a utterly ridiculous pick he has been this season, hasn't he? But I also had the captain fail as well in Raheem Sterling, only getting the 1x2. So could have been a lot higher. You know, the likes of Abraham and Mane and Trent being sort of the top scorers, as well as Madison as well, for a 9-pointer doing the business for me. But it was my bench, actually, that it's a bit ridiculous, this game. We had 29 points on my bench. That's after having 15 points on my bench for the last two game weeks. So that's been 59 points benched in the last three game weeks in total, which is just ridiculous. So I benched Jimenez, and Tom said I should be locked up for this one, having played Aaron Connolly Akon instead of Jimenez. Jimenez getting 9 points, Soyuncu 14 pointer, and Sergio Diego, even Rico, getting 6 points. That's three clean sheets in a row that I've benched Diego Rico, which is just ridiculous. Bit of a shocker, really, having all these bench points week in, week out. A few people said I should have bench boosted and I should bench boost this week. But, you know, it just shows the strength of my wild card. And it's a bit of a strange situation where I don't really have any transfers to make again this game week. But I guess that kind of moves us on quite nicely to the theme of this week, Tom, which is all about the sort of the budget picks, isn't it? So we talked about the premiums and the must-owns last week. And now we're talking about the all-killer, no-filler, some of the cheaper assets in the third and fourth midfielders and fourth and fifth defenders, etc. They've been really bossing it compared to some of the premiums this year, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly. I think maybe it's not even the case of saying killer, no filler. It's more like all killer, just priceless filler. Because that's kind of the guys we're looking at. As Nick said, it's the fourth and fifth defenders. It's the third to fifth midfielders and the third strikers. I mean, we're going to leave keepers, I think, because I think we said on the last pod, and I think it's probably still true, that you know, the movement of cash forward is probably the best way to go. But I guess, just starting to talk about a few of these guys, I think in the defender category, obviously this week was the week I got Soyuncu and Lundstram as well this week. But Lundstram is really the guy to talk about. Like, three big chances this week. The stats are great. There's the Lampard and Dele Alli-esque kind of arriving in the box late kind of shtick. But you know that. And on him, I actually wanted to slip a bit of psychology in to kick us off with. Don't fall asleep, guys. I'm going to call him a hygiene factor here. So many of you have heard me say that before. Oh, he's just basically hygiene now. And I just want to explain what that is and why that's important, how I look at Lundstram. So, quick divergent. Hygiene factor derives from a psychologist called Hertzberg about employees at work. He said they have to have two things. One is motivating factors like responsibility, job progression opportunities. The other is hygiene, that stuff like safety at work. So hygiene factors are almost universal truths or safety nets we take for granted. So think about that more, the term hygiene, you know, the basis we expect from everyone around us. We expect them to be kind of not sick, have washed their hands. Think about how you rat someone coughing, you kind of sidle away, don't you? This is linked to maybe the human need for safety, but applying this to FPL, certain players are basically just hygiene factors. Those who are kind of hoping those guys don't come off are your prey. And we've had the gamut of them in FPL, from Aaron Bissaka last year through to Michu and Mahrez in the past, so highly owned that it really hurt you. Indeed, Mo Salah was like that last year. And obviously it's linked to ownership, but you know, while the battles may rage at a really high price level, at the lower price levels, I find it's really important to be a filthy casual and pick up the cheapy best in ownership and form that you think's the best, and you can get away with it by getting a kind of fat lip from the community. Like, we've never seen a player like Lundstram thus far in FPL. Like, the nearest I can find was Kane, 5.0, 191 points, 21 goals and 7 assists. But, you know, Lundstram is an advanced midfielder, 4.0, who's a defender. So I guess for him, he's like the nail that is all kind of moved around, isn't it? What do you guys think of Lundstram? Like, I guess it's almost like a redundant argument, isn't it, Luke? Just to even kind of argue against him, he's got to be in your teams now.
Yeah, you've got to get him in. I think there's that tendency to maybe, if you've not got on someone early, to go, well, I've not got on them, so I'm just going to leave it now. And I think actually that's not the way to go. I think it will still make a difference to your rank. You know, I mean, if you had him in this week with 21 points, like, you, that's going to make a difference to your rank. So don't be put off by, you know, him being highly owned. I'm just so glad I got him at the start of the season when he was at 4 million. Same with Wan-Bissaka last year. Although he, you know, he wasn't doing as well as Lundstram. I think, yeah, you've got to get him in, really. I mean, is he 4.8 now? I think, something like that. So I think that's still such a good price for a Sheffield United defender who, Sheffield United are defending really well, and there's a few people like doubling up on their defence now. Their defenders are kind of all in the top 10, aren't they, point scorers? So, and Lundstram playing in midfield, it's just absolute gold, isn't it, for FPL. So yeah, get him in, I would say.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there, Luke. I mean, Lundstram just seems like, if you've just got to bring this guy in, even though he's now like 4.8, he's risen 0.8 million. I think it's just a hygiene factor, isn't it, with Lundstram. He's the problem with him, I guess, is like the defence and who you play as well, because it's getting quite tough actually to pick a starting three or starting four out of the defenders we own. As you mentioned, you know, Sheffield United have 5 clean sheets. There's the likes of Chris Basham, for instance, outscoring Virgil van Dijk, which is just ridiculous how good they've been so far this season. Even them playing Spurs this game week, he still seems like you want to play him. You don't want to be missing out on those Lundstram points, especially with the high ownership as well. And the other guy as well that I had, I've had since the start, I got Lundstram a bit later, but I've had Rico, I mentioned earlier, since the start. And he's another 4.0 million defender just absolutely bossing it in FPL right now as well. 3 clean sheets in a row for Bournemouth. They've got Newcastle up next. You're looking at that fixture and you think, actually, I want to be playing this guy as well, because he's been doing really well. I mean, in terms of the stats as well, Rico's really shining in terms of the creativity stats. He's created 17 chances, which is the third highest for defenders. It's actually more than Andrew Robertson, believe it or not. So he's getting forwards. He's creating loads of chances for Bournemouth. And Bournemouth suddenly, all of a sudden, since we started looking at the Norwich assets, they're defensively solid. They've got three clean sheets in a row. And looks like they're really sorted out the back line with sort of Steve Cook and Nathan Ake putting some really good performances in. So I'm starting to think, Rico Lundstrom, you want to be playing both these guys. So you think, who am I going to drop here? So, you know, the other person, as we mentioned, is Soyuncu, who's just got 14 points. So it's really tough right now in terms of who you play and who you bench.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you've got Soyuncu and Tomori, who I think are the beneficiaries of someone at official FPL going on annual leave, going on the summer holidays a little bit earlier, a really annoying time in the schedule. And they've gone, oh, mate, Phil's going on holiday. Like, we've got to launch it now before he goes away. He's the only guy who can authorise it. Them kind of opening up early means that Soyuncu and Tomori are both 0.5 underpriced a little bit. Like, a simple Google would have told you that Lundstrom is not a defender. Like, it's baffling there, really. But in terms of Soyuncu and Tomori, like, I think those two are such, like, kind of gifts, really, aren't they, this year? Because, I mean, Soyuncu, yeah, the no attacking threat is probably the most infamous phrase amongst the reactionaries now, because he scored last week, mate. But I got him at 4.5, very happy. It's worth considering the last four that Leicester have had an XGC of 6, and you can see the 3. And you've got your mate Mr. Tomori as well, and bursting into the Chelsea team out of nowhere and suddenly becoming, well, a bit of a linchpin for Lampard. And I guess, Luke, with these two, you've got to be thinking, well, one or both is just such excellent value that, you know, they're going to be padding out the squad and making it that you can make that kind of amazing kind of attacking platform, because those cheap defenders provide such value, right?
When I played my wild card, kind of, it was probably about 5 or 6 weeks in, I went off the premiums I had at the back. I think I had TAA, Van Dijk and Luka Dean and Zinchenko, and I got rid of the three of them, just kept TAA, and got in Soyuncu, got in Tomori, and I think I got Joel Ward at the time from Palace, who got a couple of clean sheets as well. And then I offloaded him when their fixtures changed, and brought in Jamal Lascelles for his 10-pointer last week, which I just couldn't quite believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Such a Brucey bonus, that one.
Yeah, it really was. Absolutely saved my game week last week with his 10-pointer. I think it was his first goal in 58 games for Newcastle.
And
it was
visionary.
Yeah, it was one of those moves where I was like, finally a bit of luck this season. So, I think all the value at the moment is in those lower-priced defenders. I mean, I don't like Tomori as much as Soyuncu, Lundstrom, but maybe even Rico at the moment, although I think Bournemouth will probably go back to being leaky, especially when they play kind of better teams than, I hate to say it, the Manchester United. And I think the problem with Tomori is Chelsea just aren't reliable for clean sheets at the moment, are they? I mean, I know he's got a little bit of attacking threat and he bursts forward and things like that, but I think actually there might be better choices there at the moment around that price. But he's in my team and he's not going anywhere for now. It's just that I'd like to see Chelsea keep a few more clean sheets.
Yeah, I think so. I think with Tomori, it's a bit of a challenge because I have been playing him and they seem to lose the clean sheet last minute as well. And that was really, really, really annoying this game week when they conceded against Watford. I think it was a bit of a sloppy penalty. But with Crystal Palace at home up next, it seems a bit, you know, churlish of me to drop Tomori in favour of a Sheffield United defender playing Spurs or Leicester defender playing Arsenal. It seems very much off the grain. So it is proving a little bit tricky for me to pick my team. And I think it's sort of, if we're moving on to the midfielders, there's a little bit of a formation shift at the moment. A lot of people, you know, looking at sort of 3-5-2, starting to think, actually, should I be playing 4 at the back? Should I even be playing 5 at the back? It's been working quite well, actually, for my dad, who's had 5 at the back for the last few game weeks, playing Rico and the likes of Dunk as well, getting him clean sheets. But I think with the midfielders, you've seen the likes of Cantwell, who's had a bit of a fall from grace, actually. He was sort of really, you know, looking like a really good attacking sort of 4.5 million midfielder. But in the last few game weeks, he's barely getting any game time at all now. I think he's only been playing 40 to 50 minutes or so each game week. And so a lot of people are starting to pivot away from those cheaper midfielders and then starting to think, you know, just playing, you know, 4 or 5 at the back. It's not big at the back anymore. As as Hindu Monkey put it, it's F all at the back. But it's it seems to be a bit of a winning strategy for some managers. But I think with the midfielders, you know, sort of the cheaper element of the midfielders, there's a few options out there. I quite like the look of John McGinn. And I think potentially McGinn and Grealish even as well, if you go for a slightly differential in Aston Villa, are both options there, sort of around that sort of 5.96 million mark. I don't know if anyone's caught your eye in terms of the cheaper midfielders, Luke.
Yeah, I think Grealish definitely stands out from Villa. I think I like McGinn, and I think he's. I think it will continue to trickle in points all season. But according to my producer Ben from our podcast, who's a big Villa fan, he thinks McGinn has moved back slightly in midfield. He's not as advanced as he was playing, especially with Marvelous Nakamba playing more. I think Grealish then had a more advanced role, so I think Grealish might be a better option going forward than McGinn. Although, you know, McGinn's qualities is there for all to see. I also like Tielemans from Leicester at 6.5. I'm really interested in Zaha from game week 14 when Palace's fixtures change. I think he's starting to look very dangerous. I think the only worry with Zaha is he's perhaps not quite clinical enough, but he's good at winning penalties, and I think he could be worth a bit of a punt when their fixtures turn. Kind of below that, I looked at Traore from Wolves. If you want kind of cheap enabler to maybe get in, you know, a Mane, Sterling and De Bruyne in your team, perhaps Traore could be a cheaper enabler to rotate with a cheap striker like Jordan Ayew, because Wolves have got really great fixtures coming up. It's just, I suppose, Traore is not, again, kind of a bit like Zaha, hasn't been that clinical. Obviously got his goals against City, but apart from that, he always looks dangerous, but hasn't kind of got that final ball or final shot in him. But at 5.1, you know, might be a good cheap option.
Yeah, I feel like Traore is definitely one of those players sort of in the Aaron Lennon mould of just sort of running down the wing and never really having any real end product or delivering. Obviously, he got that brace, as you mentioned, against Manchester City. But yeah, as you said, 5.1 million, you know, you can't really go wrong with him as a pick, especially with Wolves fixtures. They've got a really nice run of games coming up with Villa, Bournemouth, Sheffield United, West Ham, Brighton all up next. So, you know, he could easily get some returns in those games and could easily deliver. I think sort of going back to Aston Villa, I guess McGinn and Grealish are still kind of the ones that I've been looking at. I mean, in terms of this sort of the underlying stats, I know Tom did some analysis on the guys in the pre-season. So McGinn is the best pick, but Grealish is doing pretty well as well. I think McGinn's actually second for goal attempts with 32, but 13 of them actually been outside, only 13 have been inside the box, so he's kind of taken a few more pot shots, so less likely to sort of be on target compared to like Sterling, who's also had 32 goal attempts, but you know, 29 have been in the box. But Grealish, in terms of his actual chance creation stats, have been pretty damn decent as well, so flying definitely under the radar. I think Grealish only has 4.3% ownership compared to McGinn, and he's third for chances created with 35, so a little bit of a differential pick perhaps there. But yeah, you mentioned the Leicester guys as well. I've also got some vague notes on them as well, in terms of Tielemans and Perez sort of being the sort of really sort of good value picks there. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, we're all kind of fishing around the same territory, aren't we? It's always seemed to be. And I really like the calls of McGinn and Grealish. I think their fixtures are definitely going to get a little bit better soon. They had the kind of the horror duo, didn't they, of Man City and Liverpool back to back. But from now, it does get a little bit better. I think it's from game week 16 when things do brighten up. There's like a nice little run in game week 16 and 21. They don't play any teams in the top six, or they do play less than 16. So maybe it's actually 17 to 21 these days. And speaking of Leicester, I think Tielemans is definitely one I'm very interested in, just because you don't own him, basically, Nick. I know that like Maddison does, on all measures, look at slightly the better option, but I did do a comparison on fans at Wahab, and they're very, very similar. They're very close on many measures. I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit later as well, I've got a few questions on this, but Maddison broadly excels on crosses, shots, and key passes in terms of volume. But Tielemans' XA is higher than Maddie's, and his XG is still in the same ballpark, despite Maddie taking far more shots as well. So maybe it's a case of quality over quantity.
ownership's a factor. I think 16% for Maddison, 8% for Tielemans. So I'm interested. You know, you've got the likes of, Luke, as you said, Zaha fixtures really improved for them. 14 to 20, 140 points, I think it was last season. So, you know, the sort of player who could really flourish in those sorts of games. And also, you know, you've even got Southampton, long forgotten Southampton, resurging after game week 14. They've got a nice run between 14 and 18. So maybe like it's a Gineppo. But I guess here it's almost the case you've got Mason Mount already. It sounds like we're saying that it's going to move to a 3-5-2. These are the sort of people who are going to be padding out our teams, you know? And I guess that's kind of reflected in the forwards. You know, you've got likes of Akon, Aaron Connolly, who's doing the job for most people, Lise Mousset, the zombie hero. But I guess the key question is two forwards the way now? Because, you know, you've got the 3-5-2 and that power mid that we seem to be kind of preferring here, keeping that first striker out. What do you guys reckon to that? Do you think it has gone the way of 3-5-2 in terms of the formations?
I mean, at the moment, I'm still leaning much more towards three up top. And my first choice three right now would be Jimenez, Vardy and Abraham. So I think Jimenez is he's going to continue to score goals all season for Wolves. And their fixtures turn really nicely at the moment. And I think, I mean, I was looking at it and I was playing around with my team and I got a little draft earlier with a midfield of KDB, Mane, Tielemans and Salah. So I had Mane and Salah in the same in the same team, which looked really tasty. But that was with Jordan Ayew up front with Vardy and Abraham. So again, I suppose he's kind of a similar bracket to Connolly as a kind of, you know, cheap enabler. Yeah, I was looking at that and I think Connolly is nice and cheap at 4.7 and he could work nicely if you want to fit Sterling, Mane, you know, and KDB in your team, or Sterling, Salah and KDB in your team. But Brighton's fixtures aren't great and I still don't think he's nailed on. And I don't really like the thought of rotating him with a low-priced defender or midfielder. So I was kind of looking at combinations, which I think is always good to look at when you work these things out. And I think a combination of, say, you know, Jimenez, Maddison and one or two premium defenders would probably score more than Connolly, Sterling and a 4.5 million defender over the next few weeks. So I think looking at those combos is always good, and thinking, well, are these three players going to score more than these three players over the next kind of, you know, however many weeks? So yes, to answer the 3-5-2 question, I'm leaning more towards a 3-4-3 still, with my preferred option of Jimenez, Vardy and Abraham. And, you know, I don't want to waste any more time and become another casualty of the Pookie party. I've got to get out of that. And the sooner I can get rid of him, the better. And my preferred choice for him would be Jimenez right now.
Yeah, so I think I've been playing 3-5-2 actually for the last few game weeks and since I did my wild card. But I think certainly you hit the nail on the head in terms of the budget options there. I feel like there's a lot of flexibility in terms of your formations this season. The likes of those cheap defenders we mentioned, the likes of Aaron Connolly, who's in my team. He's sort of the third striker foil that I've got at the moment. And I've got Abraham and Jimenez leading the line. But then I haven't actually got Jamie Vardy. But I've got James Maddison, who's he's been doing all right himself, to be honest. A couple of back-to-back returns for him. So I feel like he can potentially cover Maddison. And I've managed to fit Mane, Sterling, De Bruyne in as well. So it is kind of working for me, that setup. But I think definitely, you know, I could play 4-4-2 perhaps one week. I could mix things up a little bit with some of these other defenders. And yeah, I think with the forwards, I think it does look like Vardy, Abraham, Jimenez is the way forward for most people. It seems like the leading line, the front three that a lot of people have. I think there's a few other options out there, perhaps worth mentioning a few of the other differentials. I did actually quite like the look of Watford's fixtures, actually. And I think De Olofeo, popular pick at the beginning of the season, but kind of, you know, people sold him quite heavily. Obviously blanked at the beginning of the season. Now he's down to 6.1 million. But Watford actually have a really nice round of fixtures of Villa, Bournemouth, Sheffield United, West Ham, Brighton. And he just got a return in the last game as well. So he could perhaps be someone a bit off the radar. And you also mentioned Jordan Ayew, who's also been doing very well as well, Luke. Certainly another option. And also Tom Zombie pick, Lise Mousset, part of the Sheffield United crew that are absolutely bossing it right now. So, yeah, a few picks at the moment. I think in terms of formation, 3-5-2 is my my favourite one for my team, at least at the moment. But certainly can see the appeal of any real formation working at the moment. Seems like there's a lot of flexibility in the options available.
Yeah, certainly. I completely agree with Luke on the VAJ, otherwise known as the V. Hang on, I can't say that out loud, can I? We need to get an explicit rating. So we're going to call it the VAJ for now, or the JAV. But everyone knows what I'm thinking, right? But anyway, yeah, I think 3-5-2 is like, we'll really struggle to get Jimenez in. It's almost looking like the case of a good fifth midfielder and Connolly versus a dud sort of fifth midfielder in like, a Dendonka, or in my case, a Cantwell, as you mentioned, Nick earlier, who's fallen from grace, and three strikers. And 7.1, Jimmy, I quite like. Wolves fixtures are quite good. And to be honest, like, even though they didn't do very well against the bottom teams last year, they lost, didn't they, the championship between them and the bottom six, they're still going to score probably in the games to come. So coming up next, we've got Aston Villa followed by Bournemouth, Sheffield United, West Ham and Brighton. So yeah, 12 to 16 is looking very, very lush indeed, and I really fancy that. Yeah, my main worry is Vardy, but yeah, I guess maybe at the moment I'm still on the 3-4-3, but I could really be persuaded. I just own Jimenez at the moment, but if you don't own him and you haven't bought him yet, I can see why you go 3-5-2. But it seems like there's quite a lot going on here, and it seems like it's there's lots of players who are kind of involved. I think beyond Lundstrom, it's quite difficult to kind of think of any who are completely hygiene factors right now. I mean, for a little while ago, it would have been Cantwell, but we were in too deep on him, and I'm glad that we managed to get out instead of going under when we had him, because fielding him as a fifth midfielder was never a sustainable option. So it'd be interesting to see what develops, interesting to see how that goes. But yeah, good discussion, guys. Let's take a break there and move on to the features after this.
Who got the assist?
So we're back, and we're on to the feature section now. This is our regular staple of things we speak about. The Market Forces, the Over 30s, Nick Pitt versus Tom Pick, and the Dad Watch. Market Forces, Nick, man across numbers, what's happening here?
So the most transferred in player at the moment, obviously, is the Lord John Lundstrom. 182,000 transfers in so far. People decided after that brace and clean sheet, ridiculous return, that he's just a hygiene factor, as you said, Tom. You just can't go without Lundstrom. He just looks key. We've all got to get him in. But I think in terms of defenders, it seems like Virgil van Dijk's actually the man that's being sold most heavily. As I mentioned, the likes of Chris Basham, John Egan all scoring more than van Dijk now. And Liverpool, despite being defensively solid, have only managed two clean sheets. And that's really, really impacting van Dijk's returns now. And with the Manchester City game up next, not a surprise that he's being sold. But in terms of the sort of most transferred out players right now, it's Timu Pukki, with 145,000 transfers out, and the Heung-min Son with 100,000 transfers out. And I know they're appealing his suspension, but it's probably likely that he's going to be missing the next couple of games. And I know, Luke, you both have Son and Pukki as well, don't you? So a few decisions, I guess, to make there after sort of Pukki's six blanks now in a row.
Yeah, I badly want to get off. I mean, I think they've got Watford at home next, haven't they? So I'm not like overly upset about keeping him for that, because that might be his last hurrah. And I think I can take one. I mean, he's worth 6.8 at the moment and my selling value is 6.7. So I can take a drop on him without worrying too much. And also my selling value on Son is 9.5 at the moment, and he's currently 9.6. So I can take a drop on him as well without losing anything. So hopefully there's no double drops and I can wait to make a decision, because I wouldn't like to go too early on that. But yeah, like you say with Son, I mean, it's funny with Son, because I think obviously, yeah, he was distraught about Gomez, but it wasn't really his fault that he had that horrific injury, was it? I mean, it looked like it was more to do with his fall after, and then he's coming together with Aurier. And I mean, I completely get the distress from Son, but I think, people need to get in his ear and say, look, it couldn't really be helped. It wasn't a bad tackle. But yeah, I worry that even if his ban is overturned, that psychologically he's not going to be in a good place. And in terms of FPL, it's not great to have him in your team. So yeah, there's some decisions to be made, but I kind of need to get rid of both of them, really.
Yeah, so I think it's one of those things that's just unfortunate for absolutely everybody involved on the weekend, and ascribing blame is too many factors to say it was definitely your fault. It wasn't Marco Materazzi headbutting Zinedine Zidane, something like that. It was a lot less cut and dried. So anyway, elsewhere, we mentioned Son is being sold, of course. David Silva is being sold too. Pep said that he was likely to miss the game at the weekend against Liverpool. And Mo Salah's being sold as well. So there's quite a lot of space in the middle. And who's filling that space? Well, it's Pulisic, 165,000 transfers in. And Sadio Mane, Luke said a minute ago that he was interested in him too, 120,000 transfers in, and he's now up to 12.0. So the gap between him and Mo Salah is 0.3, the closest I think it's been for quite a while. And yeah, there's more people who own Sadio Mane than Mo Salah, finally. I think it happened a couple weeks ago. Mane is owned by 33% now, and Salah's 28%. So yeah, quite a big difference there. We're all Mane converts, aren't we, Nick?
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously in terms of the performances we've seen recently as well, Mane seems like he's playing a little bit better than Salah. I mean, Salah was lucky to get the return in the game week before that, but that was because of a penalty, and Mane really is impressing. So no surprise that their prices are starting to converge a little bit. And yeah, just to round up the section, also a couple of forwards being heavily bought. Jamie Vardy, of course, who was leading the market forces last game week, nicked a goal in the game sort of in the last minute, which is a bit annoying for non-owners like myself. And Tammy Abraham, of course, who's doing really well as well. He's had a fantastic start to the season. Another player who had a sort of a crazy price at the beginning of the season, only costing £7 million to sort of be leading the line for Chelsea, and he's now on 9 goals. So a lot of interest coming his way, what with the Crystal Palace game up next.
Yep, most owned player in FPL, Tammy Abraham. Cool, all right, moving on to the over-30s then. They did pretty well this week, as 51 points for them. Well, I don't know if that's pretty well. I think it's probably averagely, isn't it? What was the average this week? 53, so below average, I should say. But yeah, I'm just so conditioned now to accept low-scoring game weeks, Nick. Yeah, they got 51 points. Captain Sergio Aguero came through. Jamie Vardy and Aubameyang in the front line did well. But the supporting cast really let them down. Schmeichel got an 8-pointer at the back, and Evans got 5. But yeah, elsewhere, it wasn't particularly good. Yarmolenko, Sigurdsson, Willian, David Silva contributed just 5 points between them in midfield. And elsewhere, it wasn't particularly great. So down to just over the 1 million mark now, but they've been doing fairly well. I think I kind of swapped over with them actually this week. I think I'm now 750k, so I've replaced them. But yeah, well, one of those, isn't it? Which, yeah, we'll continue. Because again, next week, quite a good team. And yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how they do. Vardy captain, of course, against Arsenal at home. All right, moving on to Nick Pitt versus Tom Pitt. This is where we pick a couple of players every week. And last week, you chose Cancelo, Nick, who unfortunately didn't appear. Let's hope you can improve the next player that you bring in rather than playing a hell song for him. So who have you chosen this week?
So yeah, obviously Cancelo was a bit of a dud pick, but is it actually his counterpart Kyle Walker that got a double attacking return for the first time in his Premier League career? So let's pretend that was Cancelo that got those points and not Kyle Walker. But actually for this week, I've gone for a sort of a central defender, defensive stalwart. I've gone for Nathan Ake, actually, Tom. So Bournemouth obviously have 3 clean sheets in a row, and they've got Newcastle up next. Newcastle have had the second least goal attempts for all Premier League clubs so far this season. I know they've just come off a 3-goal victory, but chances are that Bournemouth could make it 4 clean sheets in a row. What with the defensive performances that him and Steve Cook have been putting in so far. Ake's also been pretty good attackingly as well. He's got a goal and assist so far. And 10 goal attempts inside the box is joint highest for all defenders, actually. Quite a big fan of Nathan Ake. Wouldn't be surprised if some of the top clubs come knocking on Bournemouth's door for him next summer as well, because he's been doing really well. So yeah, Ake is my pick this week.
Oh, Ake, dear God. Oh, a very, very, very conservative yet left field pick from you, Nick. I like that. A nice mixture. And for me, it's Dwight McNeil. The only reason that is because he's very low owned and he's against West Ham. West Ham have got one of the worst defensive records, I think almost worse than Norwich in terms of their big chances conceded over the last 6. So I fancy him to really make a difference with Burnley, who are going to move on to make amends after being absolutely thrashed by Sheffield United last week. Speaking of being thrashed, let's move to Dad Watch. And Nick, embarrassingly, it's has it gotten worse, or have you made some ground up on your dad?
So just a tiny bit of ground, to be honest. I mean, he got 68 points this week, which is a pretty solid game week, but he's been doing so well, actually. That's actually a red arrow at the top somehow. 68 points and a red arrow, dropping him a few K down to 27K. But yeah, it was a pretty solid week considering he doesn't actually have John Lundstrom as well. So, you know, 68 points without John Lundstrom on without Soyuncu is pretty damn impressive, to be honest. I think that last minute Dean assist, knocking out my Gazzaniga clean sheet, made it very close between us in terms of our overall scores. But yeah, another solid performance, still absolutely smashing it. Going to do a sort of interview with him. Didn't have time this week. Hopefully, might have time next week to kind of just do a little bit of a chat in terms of how he's doing this season. I know he's told me that he's planning a couple of transfers this game week. He's getting rid of Cousin Todd, actually, Tom. He's had enough of him, and perhaps looking to downgrade a defender to upgrade Cousin Todd to a mid-priced mid. So hopefully the discussion this pod helps him, because I know he's a keen listener as well.
Awesome. Hi, Ian. All right, let's take a break there and move on to the questions.
Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
So we're back, and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. And if you want to join the league code is EIKX03. We're not doing a zombie league update this game week, but I know your zombies have been doing pretty well, Luke, in the top 50 in the league. So well done. But I know you just mentioned that your actual team's caught up with your zombie league team and overtaken them, which is always pleasing, because it's always a bit horrible when you see your zombies doing better than your actual team, and you're looking at your actual team and making changes week in, week out. Can be very frustrating. But yeah, with the Who Got the Assist mini league, at the top is a new number one, actually. It's Mustafa Kamel with the winner team, aptly named. Got 82 points this game week, up 727 points overall. Very, very impressive. 66th overall in the actual game, which is really, really good. Second in Egypt as well. So well done, Mustafa. A really nice team. Abraham captain, bit of a left field pick that worked out well for him this game week. And he's overtaken from Declan Rin, Wesley Crushers, just to 63 points. For him means he's dropped down to second in the league. In third, it's Rui de Oliveira with the CP Warriors, 83 points for him. Very nice score for him as well. Fourth is Kieran Screeton, Pain in the Vast, with 79 points. Fifth is FPL Lewis, Return of the Snag, 73 points for him. And then up to sixth, we've got Declan Kelly, like a new signing, got 88 points. Very impressive score there. Christina Hagsworth in seventh. Bendik Love got 92 points this game week. Very, very nice score there with the Red Ranchers. In ninth is our good friend FPL Chef with Bean, doing very, very well, 79 points. And in 10th is Joseph Beach, right up into 10th with 107 points this game week. Very, very nice score.
Monstrous.
Soyuncu, Lundstrom and Schmeichel making up the points in terms of the back line, with TAA as well. Mane, Aubameyang, Vardy, McGinn and Captain Abraham. Absolutely bossing it. Game week rank of 1,880, which is pretty damn ridiculous.
Score.
So he's gone up right up into the top 1,000 after being 22nd the week before. So really, really nice score there from him.
Wow, absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? At the moment, like, you know, I've got a good score this week, and one good score can really rocket you up the ranks. Because we've been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks, we're so bunched up that if you put a couple of good results together, you can really climb those ranks. You saw that in our mini league. I'm sure, Luke, you saw that in yours. And my lord, there's so much opportunity right now. That's why every kind of decision feels so sort of delicate, doesn't it? But before we get on to helping other people with their delicates, on the 13th of December, I should mention, Friday the 13th of December, we're having the London Christmas party. The Fantasy Football Hub will be in Marylebone Sports Bar and Grill from 6 p.m. onwards. And I believe, Luke, you can try to get down as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm going to do my best and bring the Triple Captain boys down if they're available. I know my co-host Rich lives in London, so I'm sure he can make it down. But yeah, look forward to that. Should be good.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely do. Don't have to tell me that to do a ticket or RSVP or anything. Do come along. It's always a really good event. I think we've got about 50 people who have so far suggested. So Friday, the 13th of December, put that in your diaries and block that time up. Great. Let's move on to the questions. And the first question is, are we all rich Uncle Jossy now? So FPL Osmo says, with Vardy, Tammy, Lundstrom, Mount, all the guys you spoke about being really high undervalued assets, do we suddenly have more money than we know what to do with? And Jeremy Lewis asks a similar question. He points out that there's so much value in the mid-tier assets right now that maybe we should just invest in them and maybe have cash in the bank or something like that. Steve Harkin actually responded and said that he had 7.2 million in the bank right now and nothing to spend it on because mid-range options, you know, Leicester and Chelsea were just so damn good. So we've got all this money, guys. I mean, do we even need to spend it all? Is there a case, as the guys have asked in the questions, that we should just not worry about the price and worry more about the value now?
So yeah, I think definitely that is the case. I mean, I've been playing the last few game weeks with sort of 1 million in the bank, actually, and it's been okay. You know, there's so many cheap options, these 4 million defenders, as we talked about already on the pod. We talked about the Chelsea assets and how they were underpriced as well, like Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham playing the role of premiums from premium clubs, so to speak. And just being dirt cheap. And yeah, we've all got a little bit of money floating around. But, you know, I think still money is good. I mean, I can't get, you know, ideally in the best scenario, I'd swap Aaron Connolly and get Jamie Vardy in. So there's always ways to spend the money and do things with your team. But, you know, at the moment, it is a bit of a weird one because, you know, you look at outside the Manchester City and Liverpool assets, you look at the expensive midfielders and they're all absolute crap, aren't they? You know, the likes of Eriksen and Nicolas Pepe just doing absolutely nothing compared to these sort of 4.5, 4.0 million players that have been bossing it. So I definitely do feel like it's one of those strange seasons where it, you know, what you spend on your team doesn't really matter. It's all about who you pick as opposed to trying to spend as much money as possible. What do you think on that one, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, when I've been playing around with my team today, actually, I either end up with not enough money at all, or with loads in the bank, because like I touched on earlier, to try and fit, you know, three or four of the premium midfielders who are performing the best, you know, Salah, although Salah's not been great over the last few weeks, and neither is Sterling, I think they will come good, but to fit in, you know, Salah, Sterling, Mane, KDB, all into one team would leave you with nothing in the bank, whereas if you kind of pick the players in those mid to low priced options who are doing really well, you end up with lots of money left over. So I think the temptation is always to spend what you've got. And I mean, I know it is with me. I think, well, who can I fit in that extra bit, that extra point, you know, 0.2 or 0.3 more because I've got it in the bank. But actually, that's not the best way to play. It's you've got to pick the best players on form and fixtures. So yeah, I mean, if you go with the players that you think are going to score the most points, to put it simply. And if you've got money left in the bank, then you've got money left in the bank.
It's definitely that point now, isn't it? Maybe even earlier than last couple of seasons where value and price have really diverged. So a player could be priced one thing, as you've seen with Mason Mount at the start, he was 6.0. But his value is that, as Nick said, of a premium player. And actually, you know, I said to Osmo actually earlier on that this year really reminds me of the Leicester season 2015-16. Like, we all had Vardy, Mahrez and Fuchs. And we also had Kane, Eriksen and Ali and Rose because they're all so cheap. Leicester and Spurs were underpriced, but they were in the title race that year. And this year it's looking the same with Leicester and Chelsea, like being a really fine spine to your side. Like, there's nothing wrong with having free Leicester or free Chelsea and or, I guess, free Chelsea. It's a good thing, obviously, that we've got all these kind of gifts to us, like Lundstram, Soyuncu, Tomori, all those sort of cheap players in Chelsea midfield. But equally, I think, you know, you're right, Luke, that you've got to keep the focus on not kind of being like, oh God, how can you use all this money up? It's a case of kind of generating the maximum points within the budget that you've got. And I wouldn't get too hung up on, you know, spending it all, as you say. I think that's really kind of the nub of it there. But it'd be interesting to see how it goes. Like, all it will take is one sort of big premium to emerge. And because there'll be lots of us, like, I'm looking at selling Sterling and selling Morpay and then replacing with Vardy and Tielemans. I have loads of money in the bank, absolutely loads. So I could jump on absolutely anyone. It's almost a case at the moment, we've got that kind of big kind of DuckTales-esque kind of having a bath and some money and waiting to see how it goes. But that's where the game goes. You've got to follow that trend. And fundamentally, I think that that's probably a good thing to do at the time being, at least, until someone else emerges. Cool. All right, next question. Holding Firmino. So FPL Boxer asks if Firmino can cover no Salah and Sterling if you have kind of Mane and KDB as the two kind of premium midfielders that you choose to go with. Luke, what do you think?
Yeah, I think if you've got Mane, KDB and Firmino, that, I mean, at the moment, that could quite easily cover Salah and Sterling. I mean, I think Mane is definitely the better option at the moment. And Sterling hasn't quite hit the heights, has he yet, of last season in terms of his returns. And it's just a question of how long you hold for, isn't it? Because I always kind of say these players are, you know, Sterling will end up with 15 to 20 goals at the end of the season. I've got no doubt about that. So it's whether you can jump off and back on at the right time, or you just hold it. I mean, at the moment, I'm similar to you. I'm thinking of getting rid of him, but I'm thinking of bringing Mane in. And I actually really like the idea of having Mane and Salah in my team for Liverpool's fixture change. And I do think that people will be rushing to get three Liverpool back in their team once they've played City, because they've just got such a good run after that. I don't think they play anyone, do they, in the top six?
No.
apart from Leicester, I think, until like game 21 or 22. And I think particularly if they beat City and they've got that 9-point gap, then I think there's no stopping them. I think they'll go on a really good run, and it will just give them more confidence. That City game's crucial, really. I think if City win and suddenly the gap's 3 points, the game's maybe a little cagier. So I think that will influence my decision. But for me, no, if you've got him and Mane and KDB, I think that's a good trio at the moment.
No, that certainly makes sense. No, I think, like you mentioned there, that, you know, Sterling, yeah, over the course of the season, he's going to do very, very well. I think a lot of the time, like, I know there's kind of a case for patience. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But, like, there's also the case that when you're managing, it's about timing and getting that right, because you're probably going to bring Sterling back in. I think Man City's fixtures in the near term are kind of a bit meh. But when you're looking kind of game week kind of 20 onwards, they've got a really, really good run then. So maybe you want to bring Sterling back then. Like, I'm not marrying the idea of selling Sterling forever. I'm not saying I just can't buy him now. I'm just going to probably try to time it. So I'm going to get on Vardy for his good fixtures and move him back to Sterling or something like that. But yeah, I mean, on the case of Firmino, I suppose, Nick, like, I'm not too sure. Like, I was a bit, I owned him for a couple of weeks on my wild card, didn't like him. It's very frustrating watching your kind of premium foil striker looking to pass when he could shoot. That's so frustrating to watch, even if, you know, the stats are very, very good for Firmino. Like, the eye test, you couldn't marry the two things up and be happy. And I was so relieved this week to get Sadio Mane in. Like, he's Liverpool's clutch player, and I think he's the one worth having. I just don't think Firmino will, I think over the course of the season he'll do all right, but it's not going to be predictable, and it's not going to be something that you can count on. And I think that's enough for that price point to say no.
I think with Firmino, I think he's been a little bit unlucky, to be honest, to only have 3 goals so far this season. For instance, he actually scored this game week, but it was incorrectly labelled offside, because apparently his armpits was offside according to an angled line. So
the Lynx effect.
Yeah, so that was a bit of an odd one, to be honest, that one. I think if he had scored, perhaps we'd be having a different discussion, because in terms of the stats, as you said, he actually got really good stats. More goal attempts than any other forward, more penalty box touches than any other forward. And I think if you're talking about whether he can cover Mo Salah and you're also owning Sadio Mane, then definitely I think he can. He can cover Salah. I mean, Sterling, he potentially can cover Sterling as well if you've got KDB, because I think with Sterling, it's the best moment. If you're going to exit, and it's a little bit of a risky strategy perhaps, but if you're going to exit him, it is the best time to exit with City's fixtures, because City's fixtures, as you said, are a bit mid. They've got Liverpool and Chelsea up next. So, you know, I think Firmino could still potentially do a job in terms of a triple up on Paul if you're looking at a sort of a Trent, Mane, Firmino triple up. I think it actually could be really effective, and it could be a really good differential pick, maybe even as well. I think So I think he definitely is an option. You know, perhaps I'm a little bit more sold on him than you guys. But
no, with the power of the VAJ, I just can't see why you'd fit Firmino in, because all of them except for Vardy are cheaper. So I just can't see why.
But yeah, no, fair enough. I think he's potentially an option, or at least another alternative. It's nice to find other alternatives and not be too template. But yeah, I think with Firmino, I think he's certainly an option. So yeah, the next question is about Nick Pope, and Martin SE5's asked, is his holiness losing his set and forget status? And obviously, talking about Nick Pope, he's asked, who is the best goalkeeper in the price range if we don't think it's him anymore? And I've never been a Nick Pope match. I think pre-season, I talked about Dean Henderson being my goalkeeper pick, and he did pretty damn well, actually. I think he's just been outshone a little bit by John Lundstrom, and obviously owning Lundstrom means that, you know, are we talking about a Sheffield United double up? Is that a bit too dangerous? Is that a bit too much of a gamble? But I think Henderson's proved himself as a goalkeeping asset. I did exit him on my wild card because of the Manchester United game in game 13, where unfortunately he's going to be ineligible because he's obviously on loan. So I think with Henderson, I do really like him as a pick, but I wouldn't say bring him in this game, obviously, because of the loan. But I think obviously there's a few other options out there we've talked about in the past. And the guy I did bring in, Gazzaniga, brought him in. He's pretty good, only 4.4, might be 4.5 now, but I think he's quite a decent pick at the price. And surprisingly enough, actually, it's Aaron Ramsdale, a person I don't think we've ever actually mentioned on the pod, Tom, who's a top scoring goalkeeper right now. So, I definitely think there's a few picks out there. Nick Pope has seemed a little bit rusty. Burnley, a few seasons back, looked really solid defensively. They're keeping tons of clean sheets. Just not the case this year. You know, they got absolutely mauled by Sheffield United, if we're going to be honest. And I'm starting to think, I know people love Pope. He's a very popular pick in FPL. But I think, I wouldn't really recommend a goalkeeper transfer. But I think perhaps there are a few other options out there. Matt Ryan as well, also doing very well. What do you think about Nick Pope, Luke? What do you think about the goalkeeper picks in general?
Yeah, I've got him. I've had him all season, and he kind of started off okay. And yeah, I think they've only had only three clean sheets so far, which isn't great. But I mean, goalkeepers for me are much of a muchness. I think if, you know, despite his kind of not great form, he's still only 12 points behind the top scoring keepers, which I suppose could make a difference right now. I mean, if I'd have gone with Henderson or Ramsdale or Ryan start the season, I'd have a higher rank. But it's boring making goalkeeper transfers, isn't it? I think if I was on a wild card right now, I probably would get rid of Pope and maybe go with Ryan or Henderson. None are standing out for me really this season, are they? And the fact that I'm just very glad that I didn't go with my original plan at the start of the season with Edison or Alisson, because, you know, they're way down. Edison's kind of fifth or sixth highest scoring keeper, and he's 6.1 million. So I'm glad I didn't go with the premium.
Yeah, no, certainly. I think we said on the last pod, it's definitely not worth the money. Nick Pope, I think I'm just going to leave him there. I agree with you, Lee, because it's boring, isn't it, using a goalkeeper transfer. And when do you have that free transfer? I mean, Nick, you've got this week of the situation where you've got two free transfers and you can do something. I mean, for a lot of people, you're not going to get there, and it's never going to be a situation you find yourself in. So I think I'm going to be still waiting for the world to stop hating Nick Pope. And I think, you know, the next three are all right, actually, for Burnley. They've got West Ham, Watford and Crystal Palace, and I think that they could hopefully record a couple of clean sheets there to just kind of puff the stats a little bit. But yeah, lots of guys flying around, as Nick mentioned. I think Dean Henderson would catch my eye as being a double up with Lundstram from game week 14 to game week 19, so through Christmas. They don't play any teams in the top six. So I think there may be a case for, you know, home against Newcastle in game week 15, home against Villa in 17, home against Watford in 19, to for them to grind out a couple of clean sheets. And if you've got double up, like I know FS Joe does, that could be really, really fruitful. But yeah, one I'm looking at from game week 13 onwards potentially. But if I keep Pope, then I keep Pope. I'm really, it's not a burning issue for me right now, I suppose. But yeah, if you're on wildcard, I maybe wouldn't be looking at Pope actually. But it's just one of those, isn't it, where eventually the keepers will probably do all right, won't they? And it's not really the focus of this season.
And I think that that answer also covers Vardy Boys' question on the Sheffield United double up at the back. I think that's it's a fairly decent thing to do. But let's get into the big thing elsewhere from what we spoke about this week, which is Leicester. Lots of questions on this, and here are the two best ones. VIP Vardy, Deathstar FPL asks, how essential is Rebecca Vardy's husband right now? Can we cover with the Clarkson hate target, James Maddison, or is it double up time? And locating Leicester midfielders, Tom Campbell explains he's between Maddison and Tielemans this week, and wonders which is the better option. So lots of options in Leicester, and I own just Soyuncu, got very, very jammy this week. Nick has a Maddison and Soyuncu, and Luke, I know you've got Vardy too, so a range of perspectives right now. Let's talk about Leicester and talk about some of the key assets there, and hopefully answer these guys' questions on the way, starting with Vardy. Luke, as the Vardy owner, like, when did you get him in, and do you think he's a player that managers should be looking at really, really strongly?
Yeah, I brought him in after his hat-trick, because I had Aguero stinking out my team and just absolutely fed up with him being benched. And I just much prefer Vardy because he's absolutely nailed in that team and pretty much always plays 90 minutes. They haven't really got a backup. And he's so clinical. I mean, his underlying stats are never actually that great, but he's so good at finishing. You give him a chance and he'll put it away. And it was the same against Palace at the weekend. Such a good finish. And he since Agatha Christie, he seems to have improved even more, seems to be playing even better. So Rebecca can get into as many arguments with Colleen as she wants, because it's not going to affect Vardy for him. But I think, I think he's a really, really good option, and I think at the moment he's a better option than Aubameyang, Kane, or Aguero, and for his price, you can't really complain. And I think I'm probably going to keep him for the whole season. I think he's just somebody that can sit in your team. And I said it at the very start of the season, I think he'll get 20 goals plus this year, and he's well on the way. So. He'd be the man for me from Leicester right now. And I like Maddison and Tielemans as well. I think I'd lean in more towards Maddison, because I think in terms of attacking, everything goes through him and he's always there or thereabouts. Whereas Tielemans tends to go a little bit more in fits and starts. He'll have a few games where he'll grab a goal or an assist. Or Maddison seems more consistent for me. I'm not basing that on anything though, so I might be wrong, but for me, Maddison just shades it.
I know, it definitely makes sense. And I think with Vardy particularly, I think that's definitely the sentiment that we want to be victims of the conformity and buy that guy in. Is it worth noting, actually, over the last four, overperforming their XG by 7, 14 goals scored, 7 expected. All about those red cards, all about them. I'm very likely to buy Vardy this week, so I'm hoping this run can continue. I'm hoping that, you know, all these ineffable things like momentum, it's intangible, isn't it? But form is really important. Like the guy barely did anything, did he, against Crystal Palace, but got his goal. And it's against Southampton, it's just the very zenith of what he can do. Obviously, there's the kind of don't sell Raheem, don't do this, don't do that, but I just feel like it's probably time to do it. And the next few are just so good. Like the next 7 games, I mean, Arsenal, his favourite team, he's going to absolutely rustle us, isn't he, after he scores a second goal. But after that, I mean, between their game weeks 13 and 17, Brighton, Everton, Watford, Aston Villa and Norwich, and 3 of those 5 are at home. I think that's really, really good, isn't it? I mean, even though, yeah, Vardy isn't the new Aguero, he's still going to, over the course of that kind of time frame, you'd be expecting him to score big in loads of those games in the is a captaincy choice now. So I'm talking myself into Vardy, of course, but there we go. But beside him, you mentioned Maddison, you mentioned Tielemans. I know that Nick, you're a Maddison owner, and Tom did ask about them too. I mean, are you still convinced Madison's the best option, or are you eyeing up the cheaper Tielemans?
So yeah, I mean, pretty happy with Maddison. I'm not really looking to do like a sideways switch. You know, the guy has 3 returns in 4 games for me, so he's doing pretty well, to be honest, in terms of his performances. He's a bonus point magnet as well. Just looks really like dangerous on the ball. He's on all the set pieces, etc. I think, you know, for me, Maddison, I am a bit nervous because I don't own Jamie Vardy and I'm not really planning to get him in, even though you've tried to encourage me to make some drastic changes like you have. It's not really in my nature, so I'm probably going to just stick with Maddison and hope he can do the business in terms of covering Jamie Vardy. Jamie Vardy ownership is a bit scary, but, you know, I've seen a lot in terms of Maddison's performances. He does look the part. He definitely fits into that sort of attacking Brendan Rodgers mould that's sort of developing at the moment in Leicester. And I feel like he's certainly a really good pick. I think Tielemans as well, another really good pick. But I think between the two, I think Maddison would be my preference. And I would still say that he's probably worth the additional outlay. Also worth mentioning, my man from the summer, Ozzy Perez. I think he's starting to emerge perhaps as another pick. You know, he's had a bit of a slow start to his Leicester career, as was well documented on Twitter. But, you know, really starting to look the part now. And I think at his price as well could be another decent option in the Leicester attack.
Yeah, certainly. And you've also got Harvey Barnes there at 5.9 as well. But with Demarai Gray there, I'm not too sure about that. I think just on Leicester generally, you know, in terms of, I mentioned earlier about tripling up, I've got one stat which is very, very good on them. So just around the section, City made 54 big chances so far this season. They scored 23 of them. That's 42% big chance conversion rate. That's a lot of big chances made. Leicester, in contrast, have made just, in inverted commas, 25 and converted 13. So as it stands, Leicester have a higher big chance conversion rate than Man City do. They've also scored the same amount of big chances as Liverpool, 13. And Liverpool have made far more big chances. So Leicester have been very, very clinical. Who's the man behind that? Well, Jamie Vardy. So I think this bleeds nicely into transfers and captains, doesn't it? And it's worth kind of just seeing how we're going to be looking at this week, because obviously we've got the clash of the Titans in Liverpool and Man City taking each other on, which I guess rules out a lot of players for captaincy and may make plans a little bit more difficult. So Luke, what are you looking to do? And who's your captain going to be here too?
Yeah, I think as I touched on earlier, I'm not quite sure what to do with Son and Pookie. I think, I mean, I've only got the one free transfer because I made two last week. And I haven't taken any hits yet this season. And I don't really want to start doing that if I don't have to. And I've only got TAA in my team at the moment from Liverpool. So I'm not too concerned about that City fixture. I've got Sterling and De Bruyne as well. And kind of anything can happen there, can't it? I think it could either be lots of goals or it could be a really cagey 1-0. So I'm all right with the three players that I've got. I mean, I think my other team that I've got on a different website where you pay to play, I've got like six. I've got three City and three Liverpool, which I'm quite concerned about. So I'm glad I haven't got that in my main team. So yeah, I need to wait and see what happens with Son. I think I'll probably transfer him out if the ban is upheld. And Vardy's going to be my captain against Arsenal at home. I think I think he's the best option. I like Abraham as well at home to Crystal Palace. But I think Vardy's the man at the moment. And so it probably means if I captain him that he'll score 1 point.
Standard, isn't it? Do with Callum Wilson and us all. Yeah, I think with me, it's a bit of a tough one as usual. I'm actually really tempted just to burn the transfer. I just don't know what to do with my team right now. There's nothing really obvious to do. Maybe a David Button to McGovern move or something ridiculous. I've got nothing on at all. So, yeah, probably going to burn the transfer, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you view it. And I think with the captain, I'm pretty set on Tammy Abraham at the moment. I quite like him as the pick. I think he's the guy I'm going to go for this game week. I'm not interested in captaining anyone in the Man City and Liverpool game, certainly, and I don't have Jamie Vardy. So I think Tammy's going to be the man with the armband. But it's just in terms of which defender to pick. I'm just really struggling at the moment. 5-2, but at the moment, I'm not playing Soyuncu and I'm not playing Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I'm not, what am I doing? Am I actually going to play a Sheffield United defender against Spurs?
Got to play TAA. I think.
Yeah, I know. So maybe I bench Tomori, but then it's like, he's got Crystal Palace, you know. Surely that's going to be the most nailed on clean sheet in my entire team. And I really want to play Diego Rico as well, having benched him three games in a row against Newcastle, who also have a poor attacking record. So it's just it's a really challenging one in terms of who the hell I play in that defence. So I think Soyuncu is definitely being benched, to be honest. I think I know Arsenal crap, but you know, they're probably going to nick at least another goal, and he's not going to do a repeat. Now said it, he probably will. But so I think he's getting benched, but it's just which player to bench out of Lundstrom, Tomori, Trent, and the other player that I forgot now, Rico. I don't know if you guys have any ideas on that one.
I'm benching Lundstrom, I think.
After 21 points.
That's just the harshest benching ever. Mate, what more can you do? Score a hat-trick. Hat-trick's the only reason I'll put him in.
You've got to make these decisions. I mean, I benched Tomori last week.
Paid off.
Against Watford, because Chelsea haven't kept a clean sheet away all season. And it proved to be the right decision. But I mean, who knows what will happen with Spurs. But I don't think I think they'll score against Sheffield United. And so Lundstrom will probably be on the bench. I mean, at the moment, I'm playing Jamal Lascelles at home to Bournemouth, because I'd fancy Newcastle to maybe keep a clean sheet there. But it's a tough decision. I mean, no matter which way you go, it's you could get burned. So I wouldn't like to advise on that. You're in a tricky situation. Yeah, you just don't want all those points on your bench again, do you?
No, it's inevitable. It's going to be another double-figure haul on the bench, guaranteed. I'm sure Aaron Conley's going to turn up with a brace or something, isn't he, against Manchester United?
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah, definitely play Connolly. United. Yeah, he'll be banging him in at Old Trafford, no doubt.
Oh God, who isn't at this point? It's a tough situation, Nick. I think you should just flip a coin, basically. I think Sorrenti's on the bench, and beyond that, yeah, he's got to play, hasn't he? So I think maybe looking at it as a who's got to play, even then you're in the grey zone, aren't you, with Rico and Tomori. Maybe be tempted to play Rico because of the attacking upside. It's very, very close. Like, Newcastle are pretty good defensively, actually, and this is the sort of game where I'd be expecting a 0-0 because neither of them can attack. But there we go. I'd be interested to see which one you go for, and kind of the most boring selection dilemma ever, I think. Which defender do I play? Classic Nick there. Right, so I've got two options this week. One is leave it, walk away, Tom, don't be an idiot. The team's in good shape. I can captain Jimenez or captain Abraham. The other one is take a -4, remove Sterling and Mopay, and bring in Tielemans and Vardy. Tielemans just because Nick doesn't own him, basically. No other option, no other reason behind choosing Tielemans. But yeah, Vardy in would be the one that I'm really looking at. I'll be selling Sterling. He's on 4 yellow cards now. And I know that there's going to be a lot of people who say, I told you so. I can't believe this has happened to you. But another way to kind of frame that as a following that, you know, a premium is going to score big at some point in the future. Well, it might happen as with Salah last year, but I think Vardy's doing well enough and the fixtures sort of indicate that move. I guess the reason I'm thinking of taking the risk is that following trends is a big part of FPL. Timing, as well, as I mentioned earlier, is also a really big part of FPL, and it can go completely wrong, as I found out with Selim Mo last year. But I'll never fall in line. Like, I still think that Vardy is a captain option. The next seven are great, and the calculated sort of gamble is that Sterling will at least at most match, and at worst be better by Vardy. I'm hoping that my guy comes out on top. I could just leave it in Captain Jimmy. And there's lots of caution being urged by people like desperately seeking Dusan. But if a rise happens for Vardy in the next kind of couple of days, I just wouldn't be surprised if I couldn't resist it and brought him in and captained him for a -4, which is a bit weird. I'm bringing in two players against my own team, but it is Arsenal and it's going to be a really easy win for Leicester, isn't it? Let's be fair. Right. Okay. That's a lot this week.
Thanks for listening, as always. Just to say who we are again, we are Who Got Your Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL. You can find me at WGTA_Nick. And you can find Luke as well if you want to follow him at Luke Jurdy on Twitter. Luke, thanks for coming on the pod. Real pleasure to have you on this game week.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Great to see you both in the flesh via webcam. Great. Thanks so much for having me. And I think, Tom, you're going to be coming on triple captain, aren't you, in the next, was it 10th of December?
Yeah, something like that. I definitely will be.
That would be great to have you on. And yeah, we're at triple captain 3 across social media. So give us a follow and a listen.
Awesome. All right. And hopefully see you in person, Luke, on December the 13th. There's a couple of other things. Our league is EIKX03. There's a theme every week as well. Last week it was the stroke. So well done to those who got that. So we're back next week as normal, as the International Snooze Fest looms once more. But in the meantime, hope to see you, and we'll speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Hi.
Excellent.
That was really good.
Well in, boys. Thanks very much for having me.
No worries.
Oh, thanks, Luke.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.